All right, Genalisa. Genalisa, where'd you grow up? Where are you from originally?
I am from West Palm Beach, Florida, born and raised my whole life there.
Tell me about your family growing up.
So I was born to a mom and a father that probably shouldn't have ever had kids. I met my real dad one time when I was 16 and when I was a baby, but don't remember that. So I was significantly raised by my mother, and she was a single mom. And my early years, she was my hero. She was my everything, you know. We were always together. And but at the age of 5 was like the horrific stuff with her started to happen. She moved us from Florida to New York for a short time. And that was my first experience of something really traumatic. This guy would beat my mom. He never hit me or did anything wrong to me, but I would watch her get beat. He'd come home from work and the food wasn't warm enough, and he would take the pot and hit her and stripped her down naked, throw her out in the snow, and then tell me that I couldn't go out there and get her. It got really bad to where he almost killed her, and that's when she finally decided to leave. It was one of the most horrific nights of my life. I was 5 years old, and he was just beating the crap out of her.
It's horrible for a kid to see.
And I went over to try to stop him, and he got mad, and he, like, pushed me out of the way, and he was telling me to, like, stay out of it. And all of a sudden, he was gone, and I was just, like, sitting there holding my mom and crying and telling her we had to, like, call my grandparents, like, we had to leave. And he came back out with a gun and put the gun in my hand and was screaming at me to kill my mom. So that was my first, our world changed there, you know. It wasn't just me and her anymore. And that was, like, the tone that set everything for her. I think that ruined her in a sense, you know. We got out of that situation and we went back to Florida, and thank God my grandparents were just always so amazing and did everything that they could to take care of us. And but my mom just was always a very promiscuous, always needed a man in her life, always picked the wrong one. And it just always, that was our life for quite a while, just always having a new boyfriend and moving and all of that. And
were drinking or drugs part of her life?
So she would drink and do drugs in the beginning, and it was very minimal, at least to me at that time. As I got older, the pill epidemic really started taking over, and her friends were very much involved in that pill epidemic. And they would doctor shop, and the pharmacies weren't connected, so they would go to from one pharmacy to the other one so that they could fill multiple scripts. And it got really, really bad. I would sleep in her bed because I was worried that she was going to catch the house on fire from smoking cigarettes, because she would drop them on the ground. It got so bad to the point, I would say from the age of 9 to, I mean, even to this day, she's still that into drugs. And but it got really bad when I was in middle school, and I think that really changed how I perceived life and how I looked at things. You know, I went from being a great student and all of that to hanging out with the wrong friends and just really wanting friends and wanting a place to feel safe and understood, because my home life was so crazy all the time. And one day I came home from middle school and her boyfriend's being wheeled out of our house, and he's dead. He OD'd. And I like watching him get wheeled out of our house, and she's just not shocked. And I had to bake rack her multiple times, you know. And at 12, 13 years old, I'm having to bring my mom into
bake rack is like a 5150.
Yeah. And it was very sad, and I would have to beg her and cry, and if she was coming off the, she was taking so many pills that when she would not have them and she would come off, she'd start hallucinating. She would hear people walking by her windows. Her friend passed away. She would tell me all the time that she hears them. When we would be laying in bed, sometimes she'd look at me and she'd say, like I was her sister, and she'd be like, Pinky, promise me you won't tell Dad. And like just crazy off the wall things. Especially when 9/11 happened and the war was on the news all the time. One morning I woke her up and I told her that she needed to take me to school, which was very rare for her to do. And instead of taking me to school, she drove us to the back of our neighborhood, which was a dead end. You couldn't get out. And she kept telling me she was shipping off. She was going to war. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I'm so confused because I didn't realize that she was hallucinating and that she was seeing this stuff. And she's like, the ship's right there. And I start panicking the more. She takes her shoe off and she's like talking into her shoe. She takes her keys out of the ignition and she's writing on the steering wheel like it's a note. And I'm just panicking. I don't know what to do. Like that was our first time with her losing her noodle pretty much. And I remember just trying to get her back to our apartment building in the front of the complex. And we get there, and I finally get there, and I tell her, I was like, come on, we have to go upstairs. I get her upstairs, and my grandmother was living up north at the time, and I didn't know who to call. I had nobody, like, around me to call for family or anything. And I called my grandma, and I was just crying, and I was like, what do I do? I don't know what's going on. I don't, you know, she's like, just keep her in the house. I'm going to call your aunt. We're going to figure something out. And she had got my aunt to come and help me. But in that time waiting for someone to come and save me, I'm over here being the parent and taking care of her. And I did get her to go to sleep. And that's when I started being very snoopy in her room. And she had wrote letters to me, my brother, my grandparents, about going to the war. She had her bags packed. She really thought she was going. And I remember just sitting there and I was like reading these letters and my heart just broke for her. And I think that's when I really realized like how bad our lives had gotten.
How old were you at this point?
Probably I was 12. So it had always been bad, but I just got really bad. And there was no saving it anymore. Like, and I would lie for her to my grandparents and say things were better than what it was for such a long time because she used to always tell me, you're the only one that loves me, that truly loves me. And because it was just me and her for so long that I really believed that, but like it was me and her against the world. And it got so bad that I just couldn't. I couldn't keep it in anymore. And I told them everything, and they were horrified to know how bad it was. I mean, there was times we didn't have food in the house because she was more worried about having pills. And there was, she just gave up. She lost who she was. She lost that spark. She lost the woman that I knew her as to be, you know. She was strong, she was courageous, she had goals, she was beautiful, and she just gave up, and I was the brunt of it, too. So I feel like she kept me around because it was easier for her to get guys to provide for us. When she's like, I'm a single mom, it's me and my daughter, you know, because my brother lived with his dad and not with us, so it was just me and her, and she would use that to gain so that we could have our bills paid or things met. Or she would lie to them and say, Jenna needs this for school, and then she would use it for drugs, and I still wouldn't have those things for school. You know, I used to remember in seventh grade my feet grew larger than hers, and I would shove my feet into her shoes because I wanted to have cool shoes like my friends, and she would only do things for herself. And, you know, first bra, I stole it out of her dresser. It was just she got so caught up in the drugs that she lost sight of being a mother, and I became the parent.
My dad was giving me a hard time about not watching the news enough, so naturally I gave him a hard time right back. I told him most of what we're shown is designed to alarm us, not inform us. And that's why I asked Ground News to sponsor my channel. Ground News is an app and website that helps you form your own opinions by showing you every article published on any story worldwide. My favorite part is how it breaks down each news source's political bias, reliability, and even ownership, so you can actually see where your information is coming from. Let me show you how it works. Here's a story about the Palisades fires in Los Angeles. Ground News shows that 13 outlets covered it, most leaning slightly right. You can instantly see who owns these outlets, how reliable they are, and how differently they frame the same event. Some headlines focus on firefighter decisions, others on weather and risk. Same story told through two very different lenses. I also like their blind spot feed. It highlights stories that are covered heavily by one side but ignored by the other. It's a simple way to step outside your own echo chamber. So if you're tired of being told what to think, check them out at ground.news/SWU. You'll get 40% off their Vantage plan, and by subscribing or even gifting it to someone, you're supporting independent thinking and this channel directly. Again, that's ground.news/SWU. Thank you for watching.
So childhood years were far and few of great memories. I would go and visit my grandparents every summer until I turned 13 and thought I knew everything, right? And started running my own show because they had rules and my mom didn't. And at 13, you start seeing things. But if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have ever had school supplies every year, a lunchbox, clothes. My grandmother would buy everything for me when I was up there for the summer. My mom never did. And it was like that my whole life. My grandparents were always the ones stepping in for that void for her. I mean, even up until now, they still do that. They fill that void of her. So drugs were a huge thing for me. Not for me, but for my mom, and just living in chaos, pure chaos. I was always just taking care of her. By seventh grade, I was over it. I was mad. I started getting very mad at the world, and I was mad at my circumstances. I was mad at her. I was looking for love in all the wrong places, and I made a friend, and that friend was probably not the best friend that I should have befriended. And I befriended her because I was scared that she was going to beat me up. So that should have set the tone on like what our friendship was going to be, right? Like I started a friendship because I feared her. And that fear became like protection in my eyes because she was protecting me. If she's on my side, she's not going to beat me up. If she's on, you know, so that kind of friendship led me into meeting boys and older high school boys and learning things that I didn't necessarily knew. So you would think that I'm so mature because I went through so much with my mom, but there was still so many things that I didn't know about life and people. You know, I knew about drugs. I could tell you as soon as my mom took a pill that it was going to hit her soon. You know, like I could see it in her face. I could understand that aspect, but I didn't know how to be a normal child almost. And I started smoking marijuana and drinking and hanging out with the wrong crowd, and still was not sexually intimate or anything with boys or like that. And I would get made fun of all the time. They would call me Virgin Mary and almost peer pressure me to have sex because they were having sex, right? Like even my girlfriends, like not the boys, the girls that were my friends were like jealous that I wasn't. And it was always so weird to me. And I hated being called that because felt like I was like missing something, right? Like, why are they making fun of me for something that I know is such a cherished thing, but they were making fun of me about it and calling me a prude and like all of those things, and really set like, I guess, something in me, like made me always question myself and like my like who I was sexually, or like that I wasn't moving fast enough, or you're supposed to be hitting these guidelines of things that should happen and I wasn't hitting them, right? And everyone else around me seems to be getting it. And I'm like, well, why are we doing this? And so that friend stayed my friend for a while, and we went through middle school together, and she was such a great bad friend and great friend at the same time, because my mom had gotten so bad, you know, we wouldn't have food in the house, and she would pack extra sandwich or ask her dad for a couple extra dollars so I could get lunch at school. And for me at that moment, that was a friendship, right? That was the friend that I needed, because my own mom couldn't provide for me. She would sneak me when I would run away from my mom. She would sneak me into her house and let me sleep under her bed and get in trouble from her dad, you know, because he always would find me that and find out I was in the house. And if he didn't, her sister would tattle on her that I was under the bed and purposely get her in trouble. But we went through all of middle school, and I started really skipping school a lot in eighth grade. And so was she, and I ended up failing and she didn't. And I couldn't understand how we were both skipping school, yet she passed and I got held back. So she went on to high school and made some friends that were older than her. And I would hang out with her on the weekends, because now we don't go to school with each other anymore. And one weekend she asked if we wanted to go to this friend's house, that they were just a couple girls and they were hanging out at her house and no parents were going to be there, so we could smoke and, you know, bullshit. And I was down, you know, I'm going to go hang out with the girls. So we go over to this girl's house, and there's like five or six of them hanging out, just like she said, in a trailer park. And everyone was just having a good time. They're laughing, they're joking, they're being girls, like, you know, normal teenage girls, I would say. And they started making fun of like this guy named Jeff and just talking about like massages and stuff, and that he was a creepy old guy. And they're laughing and they're making very light jokes about the situation. And then the very popular girl, I mean, something about her even to this day could make you do the craziest things. You know, she's beautiful. She seems like she has it all together. Very outgoing. You know, she can sell your own shoes right back to you type of personality. So it was very enticing. There was just something about her. And she was like, well, if you guys want to go, you guys can make $200 giving this creepy old guy a massage. And my friend at the time was like, do you want to go? And I was like, do I want to go? I was like, yeah, you know, I went from a point where I would steal lunch money out of friends' backpacks and in gym class to have lunch. So being offered $200 to give a massage, and that's what it was told to me, was, didn't sound like that bad of an idea, you know? Like, how else am I going to make that kind of money? And being that age and not being able to work. And the girl was so excited when we said yes. And it's broad daylight, middle of the afternoon, and she just starts getting us ready. And she's making it seem very fun. You know, she's let me wear her clothes, which I don't have those clothes. Clothes from the mall. I wore clothes from Walmart. So it felt fun. She was taking an interest in me. You know, she was telling me I was pretty. She was, you know, almost like hyping you up. Like, we're going, but it was for a massage. But I didn't understand why she was being so nice. Now I do, but then. And after about 30 minutes of getting ready, she's like, all right, the cab's here. And I was like, we get into a cab, the three of us, and we leave off of Okeechobee and Drexel, the trailer park, and you go straight down Okeechobee Boulevard to go to Palm Beach Island. And we get to the bridge, and we're going over the bridge. And I just remember being really shocked seeing it. It was like all this money that I knew was out there but had never actually saw it. And we're just miles away from it and never knew that. You know, my mom wasn't taking me over there. She had no point to go on Palm Beach Island. And so we're going over the bridge, and I was just, like, blown away. I was like, holy crap. Like, this is, like, I was thinking in my head, I was like, this is where the famous people live. Like, they really do. And we drive to over the bridge to dead ends, the road, and then we made a right, and a couple streets down, and then we turn right again, and we go down this road, and it dead ends again, and, but his house, there's the house. And she's like, oh, we're here. And I was like, holy shit. Like, when we pulled up to his house, I was like, she wasn't kidding. Like, he is a rich old guy. Like, and I hadn't even met him yet. So I was like, okay. Trying to, like, tell myself I was going to be okay. You know, you're like, all right, I'm with the girls. Nothing bad's going to happen. This and that. And she had warned us that, like, we would each go up and massage him for, like, 30 minutes by ourselves. Like, that's just how he liked it. And that he may ask us to take our shirt off. But you don't have to do anything you don't want to. And I was like, and she tells us that part in the cab, right? When we're already on the way. And I'm like, okay, all right. Well, she says you don't have to do anything that you don't want to, blah, blah, blah. So we get there. We enter in through the kitchen. There's house workers working, maintenance guys out front. There's a cook lady inside, I'm assuming, maybe a secretary. I don't really freaking know what her job was to do there, but she offered us drinks and stuff. And the girl brings my friend up first. She goes, I'm going to bring her up first. And I was like, okay. And I'm just sitting at the kitchen waiting, and she takes her up there, and she comes back down, and she's chatting with me when she comes back down. But my friend comes back downstairs, like, within 5 minutes. She wasn't up there, like, as long as it took her to bring her back up, she was right back down. And I was like, well, that's not what she said would happen. And I'm like trying to make eye contact with her to like be like, everything, like, what the hell happened? And she's like acting like nothing's wrong. And the other girl's like, all right, it's your turn. And she brings, so there's like no time for us to have a discussion on, hey, what just happened up there to you before I go up. And the girl brings me up there, and she brings me into the room. The massage table set up, and I thought it was weird that he wasn't already in the room since my friend was up there. And we get into the room, and she's like, he'll be in a minute. And she's like, go ahead, take your shirt off, and pretty much tells me to get naked. And I'm like standing there, and I'm like, she's like, you can leave your underwear on, like, just very quick. And then she like leaves, and I'm like standing there, and I'm like, don't know what to do. Do I take my shirt off? Do I not take my shirt? Like, you know, you're conflicting, but then you're also like, I don't want to make this girl mad. She's telling me, like, all of that. So you do as you're told,
and
right?
You're how old?
I was 14 at the time. Yeah. And so I'm just standing there waiting for him, and he walks in a towel, and he lays face down, tells me to grab the massage oil, and he's directing me the whole time on what to do.
Did he make any small talk with you or anything like that?
No, it was very much demands and weird stuff, not like talking, not asking questions. And he lets me rub it. He sets a timer, like a little egg timer next to the massage table. And I was like, for me, that was like, and I knew how long I had to stay, right? So I knew, like, just get through this and you're going to be done. It's only 30 minutes. Like, you're constantly telling yourself that. And in the beginning, it was just a massage. But he, a couple minutes in, he just flips over, and it's like a crazy clown face is the best way that I could explain it. He went from, like, this normal man that had walked into the room to, when he flipped over, there was, like, excitement in his face. Like, he knew what was about to happen, and I had no clue. And he just takes his towel off. He pretty much tells me to take all my clothes off and does horrific things for me at that time, because I hadn't even but kissed a boy at that point, you know, not groped or touched or any of that. And now I have this old man freaking taking control of him over me, and I couldn't say anything, or I didn't know how to say anything. And where was I going to go? I was in the room by myself, and is my friend going to be mad at me if I get upset? Like, there's so many things in that moment at 14 that I just couldn't even process all of it, you know? So you just keep looking at the clock and try not to make eye contact and do what you're told to do and just get through this, right? And I'm dying inside. The whole time, I'm just dying inside, and I just want to go home. I was so mad at my friend. I was so mad at the other friend for bringing us here and making so light of it. And I was like, she knew this was going to happen. There was no way she didn't know that this wasn't going to happen, because she knew. This wasn't her first time bringing people there.
How far did things go with him?
He sexually assaulted me. He touched me inappropriately and put his hands and stuff in places that he shouldn't have. And, I mean, that was pretty gnarly for me at that time. I feel bad when I say that it hurt me so bad, because I know that, like, people, you know, get raped and I went there on my free will. So, like, some, you hold that guilt of, like, you kind of set yourself up for that. But I really didn't think it was going to be that. And he finishes, does his thing. He finishes, and as soon as he does, he gets up, grabs his towel, and he just walks out. And I'm just standing.
And when you say finish, you mean?
Yeah, finished. He finished. he made sure he took care of himself. And I'm just standing there. I just hurry up, get my clothes back on, and I'm like, I just wanted to get the hell out of there. And, you know, so I go back downstairs, and my friend and her friend are fucking hanging out by the pool while I was freaking getting abused. And I was so, that sparked more anger in me. I'm like, and they're out there, like, laughing, having a good time. And then I was like, my friend wasn't up there for that long. I was like, what happened? You know, so I'm so confused at so many aspects of what had just happened to me. And I go out there, I'm like, look at her. And the one girl's like, all right, it's time to go. Like, we did not stay and hang out or whatever, and the cab was already waiting for us outside. I was so confused, didn't understand. We get into the cab, and as soon as we get into the cab, I fucking just lose it. I'm crying. I can't, like, I'm hyperventilating. My friend's asking me what happened. She's like, what's wrong? But the girl that brought us there looked over at me, and she goes, shut the fuck up. You just made $200, and threw money at me. And I just remember, like, you have to get yourself together. She's mad. And I don't want her mad at me. And so we go back to her house, and I pull my friend to the side in the bathroom, and I ask her what happened, like, why she wasn't up there. And she tells me, she goes, he didn't like me because I was too developed. So she didn't know what had happened. And when she said that to me, I didn't want to tell her what happened to me, because I was embarrassed of what had happened. Like, she went through nothing and got paid to go for nothing. And then I felt like that I got... it was all put on me. Like, I got the damage, but you guys all made the money. And come to find out, the girl that brought us there also got paid for doing nothing, for bringing us there. So there was this, like, whole, after finding all of that out, you know, you just don't want to talk about it. And everyone's making so light of it. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal. And I just went through the most horrific thing and couldn't even confide to my friend about it. Couldn't tell my mom. Couldn't call my grandma and be like, hey, grandma, you know? So I felt very alone. And we went back to that girl's house, and that just wasn't the end of our night or day. And this is afternoon time. I'm stuck with my friend at this other girl's house. She doesn't want to leave. She doesn't know what just happened to me. I'm having to play like everything's fine because we're all together. And we're supposed to stay the night at her house that night. I wanted to go home, but I had no way home. Like, it was either stay there or go back to my mom. And didn't want to go back to her. So later that night, the girl says, oh, I can get us into this club. Should have been fucking red flag, number one. And she's like, we should all go. And we're all talking about it. And they're all, everybody wants to go. So I'm not going to say I don't want to go because then I'm going to be left out again. And they'll be mad at me, right? And so we get ready once again. But this time it was very skimpy clothes. This time it was heavy makeup. This time it was different. And we end up going to a fucking strip club. Not a club. I would like to say those are two different things when you're saying something like that. And we get to the strip club. And the bouncer looks at all of us and looks at me and says, we can't let her in. And the girl, she's getting upset. She's like, oh, come on, blah, 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 this and that. And he's like, no. We're going to get in trouble, right? So clearly, they were aware that we were underage. Clearly did not want to let me in, and she finagled with him. She, with the bouncer. She's like, I don't know what she said or what she did, but he's like, okay. And we walk into the club, and she says, Jenna, come with me. And the next thing you know, I'm following her, and as we're walking, we're walking behind the bouncer, and she says, just follow my lead, I'll do the work. And I was confused. There's no time, she's not letting me ask her any questions, we're following this guy, and we go into this private room, which, you know, now I know as an adult what those private rooms are for, and she gets undressed, she tells me to take my shirt off, she tells me to rub her and all of that, and she proceeds to give him a blowjob. And I have to touch her while she's giving a blowjob. And I had never seen something like that. And I'm just doing, once again, I'm just doing as I'm told what to do. And I'm disgusted. I'm grossed out. It was a different color skin of a person too. So it's like, you know, I've seen penises before, but it looked different. It was like, I was in shock and I didn't know. And she was just so nonchalant about it. And like that it was no big deal. And she was just doing it. And I was like, is this what it's supposed to, like, is this how we're supposed to be? Like, I didn't know. Like, is this normal or is it not normal? And then it, like, growing up with my mom having so many men in and out of her life, I was like, well, maybe this is just how it works, right? And she gets done and she's like, now we can hang out and all of that. And we go back out and we're sitting around the stripper stage for, I mean, maybe 10 minutes after we get out of that room. And some other guy comes out from the back and says, you guys can't be in here. And she looks at me and she goes, this is 'cause of you. And I was like, I'm confused, right? Like, now I'm confused because we just went into that room. This just happened. The guy let us in here. Now we're sitting here and now we can't be in here. And now you're upset because we're getting told we can't be here again. I was just so mad. And I'm so mad at my friend. So mad at my friend because this was her friend. And she was my best friend. And she should have, I don't know, stuck up for me, I guess. I feel like. So I was just upset. And we left. The girl was pretty upset that she just did that. And we didn't get to stay. And she didn't get paid for it, you know. And I didn't know that that's how it works, like that type of lifestyle, I guess. So we get back to her house. I tell my friend, I'm like, I really just want to go home. Can we go back to your house? Can we go? And she's like, we can't go to my dad's house because my dad, it's too late. You know, like all the excuses. So we stay the night there. And the next day we finally leave. But it was like my whole life in that one day. One fucking day. Just switched. It was everything that I thought I knew about what life was, you know, even with my mom being a drug addict, everything was taken away from me that day by men, by friends, my body, like everything. I was no longer who I was before that. And it fucked me up really bad. It really did. It was easier taking care of my drug-addicted mother. What I went through was, it consumed me. And I didn't know what to do with it. And I didn't know who to tell. And I didn't know what to say about anything. And so you just stay quiet. And a couple days later, the girl that had brought us there reached out to me and said that Jeffrey wanted me to come back. And I was like, absolutely fucking not. I'm not going fucking back there. Like, I was so upset. And she was pressuring me and pressuring me and pressuring me. And then that's when she told me, well, if you don't want to go, find someone to bring him and he'll pay you for that. And I was like, confused. That's how I realized putting everything to, you know, how it was working. And so I did. I found someone. Because once again, I didn't want this girl to be mad at me. And I didn't even want the creepy old guy to be fucking mad at me. Like, you know, it's like all this. I didn't know how to navigate that situation. So I brought my friend Wendy. And I feel so bad for that. Because I knew it was going to happen. And I still brought her there. She didn't deserve that. And I lied to her to get her there, just like they lied to me to get me there. And, you know, through all of this coming back up, I have got to reconnect with Wendy through all of this, and she doesn't hate me and she doesn't blame me, but that weight hits so hard for me because I know how bad it was for me, and I just led her to him. And change the course of both of our lives. It really did. After all of that, like, I put men and money together, and I don't think I had ever actually did that before. Even the lifestyle my mom lived, you know, I always looked up to my aunt and my uncle and their beautiful marriage, and my grandparents being together for, you know, God knows how long. And but it switched that day. My whole perspective on how things worked, and now it was like I didn't have control in that situation. So it was like, how can I get control back? How do I not allow them to take from me? And by 16, I was stripping. Not back rooms, not like, that's what people assume all the time, because that's very, the narrative is like, oh, she was fucking and sucking for money. No, I was dancing and doing dances for people, but at 16, because I wanted that control. and I wanted to feel good again. And it wasn't. Now I know that it wasn't the right thing, but that's what I guess looking control looked like to me, to be able to have that. And I did that and on and off from 16 to 18 and never liked doing it. I always knew it was wrong. I always felt gross about it, even not doing like sexual acts or anything. I always still felt very gross that I was demeaning myself and my worth. And, you know, I went from wanting to be a doctor or a lawyer or school teacher to taking my clothes off for men to survive. And I wanted a way out, you know, and I knew what could happen when you do drugs. So I didn't want to be my mom. I didn't want to be this person. I just wanted someone to come save me. So when my friend's dad's friend started, as we would go leave to go out or go to work or something, we would be leaving her dad's house and his friend would be sitting outside and he would just hand us $100 as we're walking out. And his wife had just passed away and, you know, we would talk with him. Nothing, it wasn't weird. He never did anything. But he would do things like that, like just hand us $100 as we're leaving and be like, have a great time, you know. And I felt bad for him. He had lost his wife. He had kids. And we're talking. I had lost a boyfriend in a similar four-wheeling accident as his wife. And so, but I was a teenager, you know, my love was so different to this boy than him being married, but could understand each other, you know. And we would all just be talking, her dad, my friend, me, him. It was never any like weirdness about it. And then he started inviting me over and like we would hang out and he had a house and he was normal, or I thought he was. And, you know, and I just wanted what I had always wanted growing up. I just wanted a normal family. I just wanted a normal life. I just wanted, didn't have to have a lot of things or have the best of the best. I just wanted to be okay. Like, you know, have a house so you go home and that's your home and someone that takes care of you. And, so I ended up dating, or actually marrying, someone almost 22 years older than me, my friend's dad's friend. And
you were how old?
18 when I met him, and we got married and had my first child at 19. And it was good, right? Yeah, now I have this house. I have a stepchildren. I went from taking care of my mom to being a mom to children, you know, and having my own and navigating that. And I thought everything was so good for a while, you know, in the beginning. And when my daughter was almost a year old, I tried to leave because it wasn't always so good, right? And I went to my brother's dad's house with my daughter, and I woke up that morning because I left him to all the cards turned off. He took the car because everything was in his name. And so he left the car seat by the front door, and I had no money. I had no car. I was at my brother's dad's house, who's a raging alcoholic. So I knew I couldn't stay there. Now I have this baby. And I didn't want to go back, but I went back to him, and then he got me pregnant again. And I definitely think it was on purpose so that I wouldn't leave. Now I have two kids. Now, you know, where are you going to go? And he was the provider. He didn't want me to work. And I always thought that was cool in the beginning until I realized what it was. He would use money against me. Everyone thought that we had this like great marriage, but behind closed doors, he used money to control and to manipulate me into doing whatever and anything. You know, you want to take the kids to the park? Well, you're going to do this. You're going to do this. And that became my cycle of life behind closed doors. And it was wearing. It was very fucking wearing. And I kept saying, I would tell myself all the time, I'm not going to leave him. He's going to have to leave me because I don't want to do that to my kids, you know? And now it's not just my kids. It's his kids as well that have became, I've been, became their mother, you know? And it got really bad. I woke up in the middle of the night one night and he was he was raping me, and I just knew that I couldn't keep going on like that. So I planned for a long time. I was like, all right, my stepdaughter's going to, you know, she's graduating high school. She's such a great kid, and, you know, she's going to go off to college. And I was like, I just have to get her through her senior year, and then we'll figure this out, right? Like, we're going to figure this out. You're going to tell someone, you're going to tell your grandparents. And I got her to her senior year, and she graduated, and I took her up to Massachusetts to tour her college. I thought I was doing everything right, getting her set up. And then when we came back from touring the college, I told him I was packing my stuff and I was leaving, that we needed to separate for a little bit because I didn't want him to go crazy. And I went to my mom's ex-boyfriend's house, and he let me move in there. And as soon as that happened and my husband thought that I wasn't coming back, he started doing crazy things like stalking me at work and putting antifreeze down my gas tank or popping my radiator and doing anything he could because he knew that I would have to come crawling back. And but this time I was like, I'm not fucking going back there. And I lost a lot of things when I left him. My brother turned his back on me. My friends turned my back on me because they thought that I had this perfect marriage, right, with this old guy. And nobody knew what was going on behind closed doors. And so when I left, everyone was like, couldn't understand. Nobody could understand, but nobody was asking either. And he just harassed me. He stalked me. He did everything to try to get me to come back. And when he realized he couldn't, when I started dating, that freaking set him off even more, you know, because now he went from having all this control over me to when I left, he was like, well, you have the kids. Let's see how you fucking pan out. And then as soon as I started doing it and making it work and started dating, he was like, well, now I'm going to take the kids. So now we go through this divorce. It's 50-50 custody. You know, you go back and forth, this time thing. And because he knew he had no longer had that control over me in the way that he had before, he started using my kids against me. And it went from 50-50 to, well, they get to make their own decisions. They get to do this, to my daughter with autism coming home to me and saying, Daddy said he's going to kill you. And if you know something about autistic kids, they don't lie. about things like that. And I was scared. I was very scared for them. I was scared for me. And I would try to hold him in contempt of court because he was doing all this stuff to me and to the kids. And didn't have money for a lawyer, tried to go to legal aid and get a lawyer and get help with a lawyer. And I remember the lady asking me a question, and because I smoked marijuana, she didn't want to help me. Out of all the things, I mean, you could take a hair sample, that's the only thing you're going to find in my system. And they're telling me they can't help me because of that. And I was just feeling defeated. So he put that fear in me with the kids that I stopped fighting him, you know, like on my time, because he would be so mean and so nasty and then show up at my work or do this or just beat you down. But he didn't treat our kids like that. So it was like hard for me to justify, like, you know, he was a bad husband, but a good dad. And like, how can you be two things at once? So my relationship with my daughters suffer quite a bit out of my fear for him. And the icing on the cake on all of that is 9 years, or I've been separated or divorced from him for almost 10 years now. And 7 years ago, my mom moved in with him and has been living with him ever since. So.
That's interesting.
Living a very bad Jerry Springer Show Lifetime movie. I'm not sure anymore. She says it's to help take care of the kids, but my kids are pretty much almost adults now.
And she's still using?
Yeah. She says she doesn't use anymore, but when you grow up with somebody, like I said, when she would take the pill, even when I would know, right, when, like, the effects and when she talks on the phone and, yeah. So, needless to say, I haven't talked to my mom in 7 years. And then my life blew up again. You know, I found normalcy. Things were going good, you know? And I was struggling, working, and just trying to make a living. And then all the Jeffrey stuff came back up. And, you know, I was just scrolling on stupid fucking Facebook. And there's a side-by-side photo of him and Bill Clinton. And I like stop, and I hadn't seen him in all these years, right? And I'm freaking out, and I'm like instantly the panic, not because of Bill Clinton, because of Jeffrey, by the way, like who cares about Bill Clinton? But I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, what the fuck? And it's like a clickbait article, you know, they just want you to click it. So I screenshot the picture, I send it to the girl that my friend that got me involved with all of that. And I was like, holy shit. Did you know that he got in trouble? Because this is 2017 now. He got in trouble in 2008, 2009, and I never was ever questioned about anything that happened, which was so crazy because I was very easy to find back then. And, you know, I wasn't out running the streets or anything. Like, if they would have searched, they would have found a lot of us in Palm Beach. And I remember talking to her. She calls me after I send it to her. And she goes, oh, yeah, you didn't know he had gotten in trouble. And I, like, pause on the phone. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me right now? And she's like, yeah, he got in trouble back in the day. And this girl was living in my house when this was all happening, when he got in trouble and never said anything to me. And she's like, well, I didn't think it was a big deal, you know, because he didn't do anything to me. And I was like, not a big deal to you, but a fucking huge deal to me. And she still doesn't even know what the happened in the room. So I'm like mad at her again over the same shit that I was mad at her fucking 15, 20 years ago, you know? And I was like, why? You didn't think she's like, no, you know, it was whatever and this and that. And I was like, You got to be fucking kidding me. So I start doing my research on actually how much trouble he got into. And he got a slap on the wrist. And at that time, my daughters are going to school on Palm Beach Island for violin. And that's only a mile from his house. And I'm like, never thought about him like that, even in the proximity of my kids, because I've tried to push him away, you know, and not think about that. And then when that came back up and I'm reading that this man didn't even get in trouble, sweetheart fucking deal, work release for 6 days out of the seven, and was still doing the same shit. And I knew in my heart that he was still doing all of this, right? And so I'm like, well, now what do I do? Now I'm enraged. I'm having all those emotions that I had when I was 14. Now I'm old enough and I'm strong enough to fucking stick up for myself. I left my ex-husband. I'm like, you know, I'm like, I can fucking take on the world. Nobody's getting away with this shit anymore. And I reached out to like multiple lawyers, and I had some laugh at me. I had some of them hang up on me. And so I started doing more research. I was like, I got to be able to find a lawyer that represents some of the girls, because those, obviously, they believe them, right? And I've had these people laughing at me and not even helping me or directing me. And so go down the rabbit hole of fucking taking in all this information. And for me, I thought it was just a small group of us girls that were involved in this, right? And as I'm reading this, I'm finding out all of this horrific shit, and it's so much more, and there's so many more girls, and it's, you know, and I'm enraged now. And I'm like, I could have, I'm mad at myself. If I would have told someone back then, I could have stopped so-and-so and blah, blah, you know, and you start getting into your head. And I finally find Brad Edwards, my attorney now, and I remember calling him and talking to his secretary, and I was like explaining. And when you're finding out something like that, you're just fucking rambling. You're just fucking blah, 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 blah. And then she's like, hold on, let me see if I can get him on the phone, which isn't typical usually when you call an attorney that you can get them on the phone right away. And he got on the phone and he asked me a few questions, and I remember the one question that really fucking threw me for a loop was, who recruited you? And I know it's not what he meant it like that, but it's how the process worked. He wasn't trying to offend me by saying that word, but I had never thought of it like that. And I remember just crying, and I told him who it was, and he was like, you know, that was it. And we started working together, but he told me, he's like, there's nothing, you know, our hands are tied. There's nothing we can do. There's no light at the end of the tunnel for this. And I was like, Brad, we can't let him get away with this. You know, I was always checking in with Brad and being like, can we do this? Like, I'm coming up with my own ideas, and this man's gone to law school. I know he knows what he's talking about, but I'm like, we gotta fucking do something. And Julie Brown from the Miami Herald decided that she was going to do a report on him, on Epstein. And she reached out to Brad, and Brad reached out to me, and he's like, Jenna, I don't know if this is going to go anywhere. Would you be willing to talk to Julie? You know, no pressure. I'd never talked to anyone besides Brad about what had happened, and this and that. And I was just like, I remember being like, anything to fucking to help the cause, right? So we meet, the first time I meet with Julie Brown is in Brad's office, and that was the same day that I met Virginia Roberts. At that day, and she was in there talking to Julie. When she came out, she came over to me, and I had still really didn't know the whole picture of like what Jeffrey had been doing. I still thought it was just this like Palm Beach thing, you know. And Virginia came out to me, and she just came up right up to me, and she just gave me a hug, and she's like, I'm so proud of you for speaking up. And I was just kind of blown away that like she was thanking me for something that I felt like we should be doing. But I didn't realize how big Jeffrey was at that time either. And So I go into the interview with Julie, and we're sitting there, and she, first time I'm in front of a camera, and she's got her camera lady there, and she's talking, and she's asking me all these questions, and she's, you know, just spitting them out, and I'm like, I break down. I start fucking breaking down in the interview, and she, like, pauses it, and she goes, do we need to do this another day? And Brad and his partner right away was like, put it to her and was like, this is her first time ever telling anyone her fucking story. She doesn't need time. She needs you to freaking listen. You're holding no space. You just want her to spit out the story, and she's telling it for the first time, and you have a camera in her face, and you're telling her, like, because I was crying, like, it was bad taste, bad, poor choice of words for her. But we get through this interview, and I allow her to use my face for this. And she worked on that interviews for over a year, that report, before she released it. And I remember texting her all the time, like, always waiting on the edge of my seat, like, when is this going to fucking come out? What's going to happen? And when it finally did come out, it fucking blew up. And I remember calling Brad and being like, we're going to fucking get him, aren't we? And like, it was the first time that, like, there was some positive, right? That, like, people were listening, people were upset, people wanted to know how this happened. Everyone's finding out the big scheme, how he had been trafficking everywhere and all these places, not just in Palm Beach. And I was like, he's going to get in fucking trouble. This is like, I'm the first glimpse of hope. And I was like, kept telling Brad, I was like, the one thing that I want out of all of this is just to be able to have my day in front of him and him have to listen to me on what he did to me and what he stole from me. And Brad's like, we're going to get that, you know, like, it looks like we might just get that. And my world changed, right? I allowed myself to go publicly for something that I was extremely embarrassed about. I had reporters coming and showing up at my house, showing up at my job, coming, you know, and playing outside with my kids, and they just walk up. It was very, I'd never experienced something like that before. And a lot of fear started coming in play with all of that, because now everybody's trying to reach you. And I couldn't understand at that time. Yes, I wanted him to get in trouble, but I also didn't want to lose my privacy for me and my family. And it was like vultures coming in and trying to eat me alive, but not in a bad way, like trying to help, but it was just too much. And it put me in a bad place for a while of like depression and stuff, because I kept thinking, am I doing this for the right reason? And I knew I was, but I also knew it was at such a big cost to myself. And that balancing was really hard to, on the days that were so dark, that I was doing the right thing for the right reasons, because there would be days that I would eat myself up, that I have these people showing up here and no privacy, and now everyone's going to dig into my past, and I was so worried, and like, just crazy things in my head. And then he got arrested, and I just was working at a church at that time, and I got a call, and he's like, we got him. Brad called me, and I was like, just broke down in tears. I was like, this is fucking, all right, this is what we had been working for. We got, this is, something's happening, right? People are listening. He's gonna get put away for the rest of his life, right? And we were setting up for that, to go to court and do all of that and to have my day, right? That I had so much wanted. And then I got that call that he was gone. And I had already put myself through so much, and, you know, you talking to the FBI and doing all, like, so much stuff. And then to get the call that he was gone, felt like I did everything and still wasn't going to get what I needed.
That he died in prison.
Yeah. And I was never going to have my day in court. He was never going to have to sit there and face me. He was never going to have to listen to me. He was never going to have to hear my words. Whether they would have affected him or not, it was for me. I needed that. And it was stolen from me again. And I remember texting the FBI lady that I did a lot of talking to with. And I said, so he wins again. And that's how I felt. People say, you know, he's dead. That's a good thing. Yeah, great. But he still won. He never had to be held accountable in a way that was fair. You know, he lived his life for so long. And then when we finally got him, it was taken from us. And that was just, for me, not okay. And then you have this judge in New York who's like, oh, sorry, he's dead. We can't tell you anything. But here, come in, and we're going to give all the survivors a platform to speak. To who? To you? To the fucking reporters in the back? To who? You, and then thinking that they're doing me a fucking favor. Anything I had to say was to him, not to anybody else in that fucking room. I was appalled. I told Brad, I will not speak at that. I am not going to speak those words that were meant for him to fucking hear. And you guys all want to just fucking use it as a fucking ploy to a news media outlet or a fucking circus act. And that was step one of the baby circus. The circus has grown so outlandishly in this whole fucking thing that it's beyond me. Like, I get asked so many times, well, what do you think about this? I'm like, I am processing this like the rest of the fucking world is. Did I know that he was trafficking people to other people? Did I know that he had this whole ring going on? Do you know how much that hits on me when I thought for so long it was just this small group of fucking girls? To come to find out when I'm sitting in an FBI meeting for them to blow smoke up my ass about how he supposedly died, and girls are walking in that I went to school with and never knew that they were involved with him? Girls that I met when I was in college and was raising my kids with them together and didn't know that they were involved with Epstein. Those are hard things to swallow. And it's hard to digest that. It's hard to understand when you, for so long, you have thought it was just this small group of girls. To find out how broad and how wide it is, and the regret that you hold on yourself for not speaking up sooner, even though now I know that I wouldn't have been believed back then. He would have, you know, get away with it. But how many girls I could have saved? Or how many, it's like, it was just mind-blowing. And then knowing he's got ties to Lex Wexner. The first job that I, real job I had was at Victoria's Secret. I was like, was he fucking, you start fucking going crazy. You're like, was he watching all of us? Did he keep an eye on all of us all the time? Does he have a little roster and be like, this bitch better not say nothing? Like, you really do start fucking, you go crazy with all these thoughts, and you're hearing all of this, and then you're seeing all of this, and then you're just watching the circus go on, and it's such a crazy, crazy experience to be living through. And then everything dies out for a while. It gets quiet. He's dead. Then Maxwell pops up, and we're going to go after Maxwell. Cool, let's do it, you know? And then it kind of like dies out again. And then Donald Trump gets on fucking his little crusade campaign for his election and is like, we want the release of these files. And I was like, the first fucking president to be saying what needs to be heard, right? Like, this is horrific, the what he was doing. And he runs his campaign on this, and you vote for him, right? He's like, fuck, he's going to release out of anything. If you agree with nothing, he's going to release these fucking files. We're going to take all these fuckers down. Really. And he was working with my lawyer behind the scenes. So why wouldn't I have believed him, right? He's going to release these files. Then he gets elected and we get called to the Capitol to do a press conference on the release of these files. And now it goes from releasing everything to now this is a Democratic hoax. Now, why are we still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? Why? And I'm like, I'm confused. I'm just over here fucking confused and like, what's everybody drinking? Can I get some? Because the world done lost their damn noodles. And I'm out here, I got the Democrats fucking, come on, Jenna, we got your back. And then I got the president out here saying, you guys are fucking hoax. And then I'm like, it's not political, but here, let me help you. And then, oh, it's not political, but here, we're going to do this. And then, and you are, you're a fucking political pawn in all of this. And then, and the, all the reality is, go after the fucking pedophiles, right? Like, that's one thing we can agree on, right? We should be agreeing on. And so my life has been a whirlwind lately. I just, the song and dance and the craziness of all of this and no hope in our government. I've lost all hope in our government. Both sides, left, right, in between. They're all fucking some bullshit, like straight up bullshit. Like I'm watching people getting taken down in other countries and we haven't arrested one motherfucker over here besides Maxwell. We're doing this circus show of let's Maxwell do a deposition. Let's the Clintons. Are we fucking out of our mind? We're going to let a lady that was proven to have lied under oath. And then we're going to talk about the president who said, but I didn't inhale. Are we fucking out of our minds right now that these people are going to go up there and speak the truth? They, and that's all they're doing. Oh, well, he said he doesn't remember them. Well, that's fucking nice. I'm glad he doesn't remember them, supposedly. But where's this fucking going? What are you doing? You're playing with our emotions. You're fucking using all of us. You're re-traumatizing us at the expense of your guys' own political plays. And it's disgusting. And that's the country we fucking live in. Where I watch other people getting held accountable of royal families, high, powerful people, and I'm sitting over here fucking, we're a joke. We're an absolute fucking joke. And it's so horrific.
What do you think we should do now?
Hang them all. Pam Bondi said, if we go after everybody that was involved, our government will crumble. We'll fucking fall. And the fact that you guys don't want that to happen speaks volumes on every aspect of it.
Do you believe Epstein is dead?
You know, I, me and the therapist go back and forth on this a lot.
Okay. Everybody does.
Do I think he's dead? He could be. Do I think he could also be living underground? Very much so. He had too much information on too many people, and it's very clear in the release of these files. Even the redacted files, it's still very clear the ties and who he was hanging out with and who he was around, that he had shit on people. And
the most ridiculous part of all of this is that they're going to release the files, and then there are huge chunks that are not being released.
And then
so what are we doing?
Why are we protecting them?
What the fuck is that?
Men or women, I don't give a fuck who you are. Fall, everybody. I don't care who you are, what power level you are. The fact that we think that anybody thinks that they're above the law. Because if this was a normal person, when he got in trouble the first time, he would still be in prison right now. He would have never, ever gotten that. They had 40 minors that they could have accounted him for in Palm Beach. He got charged with one and then one prostitution. They stopped looking for us. They got to a number back then and they were like, fuck, how are we going to cover this one up? We're finding girls left and right. And then they use, thank God I wasn't found or involved in that back then, because I don't know if I would have made it out of that, because I have talked to survivor sisters and his teams were hunting them down and stalking them at 16, 17 years old, 18 years old, freaking watching their houses, pulling up their MySpace profiles, using any picture of them at a party or something against them. Like, I was so broken back then. If that would have been used against me, the things that I was doing back then, stripping or being any of that, I don't know that I would have made it out. And some of these girls didn't. They didn't make it out. We have lost numerous girls to this. It's hard. And it doesn't go away. And every day, we can't escape it right now. And people fucking forget that. I go to the gym, it's on the fucking TV. I go to dinner, it's on the TV. You can't go on social media. You cannot escape it right now. And then I still watch nobody doing nothing about it. Can't escape it, and nobody's doing anything.
How does that make you feel?
Enraged.
Yeah.
Livid. Never thought I would want to be in politics, but it makes me want to fucking get in there and clean house for them.
There's never been a more embarrassing time to be an American.
I asked for refuge with the Australians if shit gets too bad. I was like, will you guys take me in? Like, that's sad. We're supposed to be the greatest country in the world, and we can't fucking protect children. And these people don't stop doing it. They don't just stop. Even if they're worried about getting in trouble or think that they might get in trouble, they're still fucking doing it. Don't think that it isn't. And it could be your freaking kid next. It doesn't have to be a low poverty child. That wasn't the case for all of us. Palm Beach, he got a good grip. He got a good grip on the poverty children, but that was not the case. Some of those girls came from great homes with great families and great, and they still got sucked into it. So don't think for one second that couldn't be your kid next. It's the same thing when it comes to drugs. Don't think it ever can't be you or your family. Because it is.
If, let's say Epstein's still alive somewhere.
Wow.
What would you want to have said to him?
Oh.
Because if he is alive, he'll see this.
If he's alive, I would have to say, you fucking stole everything from me that day. You set the tone for my life. You made me feel less than. You made me trust people that I shouldn't have trusted. You destroyed my friends. I will never, ever get that peace back. I will forever, ever be haunted by you. And you should be haunted by us. And I hope you fucking burn. Can't believe you would use your power that way. Just can't. When people, he could have done so many good things with himself, and he did it.
It's crazy how so many of the most powerful, most famous people in the world and in our country are into this. This is what our leaders are into.
For me,
14-year-old girls?
Yeah, it's like they get everything that they can possibly get, and there's nothing left for them to get, so they have to
find something crazier.
Exactly. Or they start getting older and think that they, I don't know. But I look at most of these men, that are involved and they have children or children in their lives. And they're still doing that. Like, it just, but we allow it in society. We downplay it. We have a president that fucking runs women through the mud, and you don't think that other generations aren't watching that, younger people, and saying, okay, well, if the president can say, grab him by the pussy, why can't I? We're setting that tone in that narrative, and we're allowing it. And that's heartbreaking. You know, it's so bad that I don't trust anybody anymore, that I'm going to homeschool my two youngest next year because it's gotten that bad. And absolutely not, you know, they need to be in school and all of that, but I don't fucking trust anybody. I don't trust the government. I don't trust the fucking school system. And at the cost of these people, they did that to me. And I can't ever get that back.
What are you still dealing with today from all of this?
A lot of shame. I hold a lot of shame and a lot of guilt for what I did. People can tell you all the time it wasn't your fault. They were the adult. But you hold that. I was 14. I knew right from wrong. I thought I did, you know? So but I hold a lot of shame and a lot of guilt and a lot of disgust for my own self still.
What would you say to someone who's going through something similar? Maybe not with the most famous people in the world, but.
You feel alone, but you're not alone. There's so many of us that go through this, and you're strong, you're beautiful, you are loved, and you are worth more than anything they could ever take from you. And on your darkest day, show yourself some grace that you're still here. Ooh, I'm sorry, I keep crying.
All right, Jenalisa. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It was powerful. Thank you.
Ooh. Man. And you know, you got a daughter, so.
I have two.
Oh, so, yeah.